And welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Douglas Abrams is an author, an editor, and a literary agent. He's co-founder of HumanJourney.com. It's a public benefit company working to share life-changing and world-changing ideas. Today, we're going to talk about one of those ideas, the inherently human trait of joy. Abrams spent a week with His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The two men reveled in their friendship and discussed the nature of suffering, happiness, and deep joy. One of the results of that week is the Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World. It's in bookstores now. We welcome Doug Abrams to the show. We're reaching him from Los Angeles, California. Welcome, Doug.
Lori, great to be here.
As soon as you see this book in the bookstore, you just can't miss the cover with these two men on the front, and their faces are just lit up as they look at each other. So it's an immediate grab off the shelf there. Give me an idea of how the book came about. I mean,
sure. Well, I've had the great privilege of working with Archbishop Tutu for over a decade on all of his book projects. But I was at his wife's 80th birthday in South Africa with the chairman of the Dalai Lama Foundation, and he turned to me and he said, "What do you think about these two guys writing a book together?" And I said, "Wow, that sounds like a fantastic idea. What would it be about?" And we both paused, looked at each other, and said, "Joy," because these are two of the most joyful people on the planet. So we were at Archbishop Tutu's office and having sandwiches, and I turned to Arch, as he's affectionately known, and I said, hey Arch, you want to write a book with the Dalai Lama? And he turned to me and said, "I'd do anything with that man," which was just great. I mean, because they just love each other. They have this fantastic friendship, and they call each other their mischievous spiritual brother, because you know, they're obviously from very different religions. One is Christian, one is Buddhist. One is from Africa, one is from Tibet. But they share this core relationship and this reminder that even in all of our differences, at the core, we are so similar. And those who are have spent their life on the spiritual path like they have arrive at the same mountaintop.
Now, they haven't spent a ton of time together just because of the lives they leave and some political, world events and stuff. How did that friendship become so close?
Well, they both won the Nobel Peace Prize, so they met at one of those, one of the Nobel events. And actually, when we first got there, both global politics and health and being global leaders, has kept them apart. The global leaders don't have a lot of time to hang out with their buddies.
Right.
and drink a beer. And so it was really amazing. I mean, we knew what this would mean for the world to have them together and be able to create the Book of Joy. But we didn't actually realize until we arrived what it would mean for them to have a week with each other and have this time with each other. It was really so incredible. So they've only met, I think half a dozen times in their life. When we arrived and we went and had lunch together, and the Archbishop Tutu told this story about one of the first times that they met, and they were lined up to go on stage, and they were lined up by age, so that the Archbishop was first and the Dalai Lama was behind him, and he starts to choking him playfully. Here's the man of the world icon of compassion and peace, choking Archbishop Tutu. And Archbishop Tutu turns back to him and he says, "Hey man, the cameras are on us. Act like a holy man." The whole week was filled with this kind of laughter and humor and teasing and profundity as well.
And you took that moment when he says, "Act like a holy man," and sort of expanded it a little bit in the book to say, yeah, even holy men, sort of have to remember that their behavior matters. I mean, it was a fun moment, but then you also turned it into sort of a lesson in the writing. Did you find, I want to know if you had this huge sense of responsibility and terror as you went into this to say, "I have to capture this somehow, I have to," or
Yes. I mean, this was an incredible privilege, but a huge responsibility. Yeah. And I definitely had many dark nights of the soul, maybe some dark yeah. afternoons of the soul, some dark mornings yeah. of the soul. But, you know, the night before we were starting, you know, these 5 days of interviews, and we got one chance. We got five camera film crew there. We got one chance to kind of capture this for humanity. And I definitely got woken up in the middle of the night and saying, you know, when is Oprah Winfrey or Anderson Cooper going to come in and do these interviews? So, you know, we were sure yeah. that it had done right. But unfortunately, as Archbishop Tutu says, sometimes it doesn't matter if you are, good enough or not, you're the one who's there.
Yeah.
So I tried to take that to heart and tried to show up as best I could and to kind of catalyze the time together. I was aided by the Dalai Lama's translator, Thubten Jinpa, who was there with me and helped contribute to the questions. And then we went out to the world and we got 1,000 questions from the world in a couple days. And then had to kind of really refine what we were going to ask and really figure out how we could, distill this. And you, what you were saying about, you know, even holy men have to act like holy men, you know, I think that's one of the core, insights of the book is just how, what the Archbishop talks about is that we are all masterpieces in the making. You know, we are meant for perfection, but we are not yet perfect. And we're all on this journey of becoming our best selves. And I think the Book of Joy in many ways is their attempt to share what they've learned in their long lives from the challenges that they've faced and all of the hardships and adversities they've struggled with, and what they've learned are the wellsprings of joy even in the face of that adversity.
When you solicited those questions from the world, what did the world want to know? What were some of the themes that came up that you had to turn around and sort of translate into those conversations?
This was really interesting. We got all these wonderful questions, including questions from children, and one wonderful question from a child about how the Dalai Lama could forgive China for invading Tibet. But the question that most people wanted to know, which was really interesting, was the question of not how do I have more joy in my own life, but how can I experience joy in a world that's so filled with suffering? Mm. And it was a really profound reminder of actually what they talk about in the book, which is that our relationships to one another, what Archbishop Tutu uses the African word Ubuntu to convey, is that we are who we are through one another. We are deeply connected to one another. And when somebody is suffering in Europe as a refugee whose child is drowning, or suicide bombing goes off in the Middle East, any experiences around the world and in our own country, even if they're not people that we know, we are deeply affected by that. And none of us will really be truly free of that kind of suffering until we all are. And I think ultimately, even though we can reduce and minimize the kind of suffering that we see in our world, we're never going to be free of adversity. I mean, in fact, one of the profound insights that they shared was how much sorrow and joy are actually the light and shadows of life. You can't really have one without the other. And I think I went into this really wondering or imagining that sorrow and joy are these two poles, these two opposites, and our goal is to try to maximize our joy and minimize our sorrow. Mm-hmm. And really what they remind us is that it's so often that going through the experiences of sorrow that we discover our joy, that we learn and grow. As the Dalai Lama said, we can turn every adversity into an opportunity.
And these are two men who know of what they speak when it comes to adversary and sorrow.
Yeah, for sure.
You're sort of sitting in for all of us in these conversations, and I'm wondering how the week sort of impacted you, and maybe on a broader scale, how your work with Archbishop Desmond Tutu has sort of changed your own perspective in life.
It's a great question, and I don't think you can, kind of be exposed to this kind of profound and poignant and simple and clear truth, whether it's staring into their eyes for 5 days or reading it in a book without being deeply affected by it. And I think for me personally, actually, it's been kind of ironic, as life often is, that I've had some personal challenges and adversity in my family and also professionally in the last couple months as we've been promoting and talking about the Book of Joy. And I think it's just, you know, helps me to see what I was saying earlier, and I don't think I would have said this before working on the book, that those adversities, those challenges, you know, are opportunities for us to, you know, grow and deepen. And Archbishop Tutu talks about it as a kind of muscle. You know, he says, you know, you're not going to have big muscles if you're lying on the couch. You have to, it's like resistance. You need resistance to build those big muscles. And something quite extraordinary, just like is the same with our character, our soul, that we similarly seem to need that resistance in order to grow and change and deepen. Yeah. I think also just, you know, being, you know, I think that one of the things you asked about my relationship with Archbishop Tutu, I think he has, I grew up in New York City. I grew up in a much more kind of isolated place, and you know, where you weren't as much a part of a community and a town like you often are in the Midwest or the Dakotas. You know, you're in your little apartment behind your locked door.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, being with Archbishop Tutu really allowed me to experience us all as children of God and as part of that Ubuntu, that connection that brings us all together. And I think I see the world kind of with the eyes of the heart that he talks about much more so than I ever did before we started working together.
This could conceivably, because of the way world politics works, because of these gentlemen's age, I think they're both 80 or so, this could be the last time that they spend this much time with one another. What does that make you feel sort of going forward about this book and how it sort of can contain a little tiny bit of that legacy?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it was very poignant during the week that we were together, the realization that this might be their last time together because of their health. Archbishop Tutu just turned 85 this October. The Dalai Lama he was just turning 80. And, you know, Dalai Lama is not allowed to go to South Africa because China has leaned on South Africa in such a way that they won't give him a visa. So, and Archbishop Tutu, given his health, is likely not going to be traveling outside of South Africa. Mm-hmm. So it really was, it turns out that we were right, that it was probably the last time that they would ever see each other. And there was such a, kind of the kind of footsteps of mortality were really present with us. And as we were, you know, right before they were saying goodbye at the end, you know, there was this moment when we were talking about death. And Archbishop Tutu said, you know, or it was, you know, kind of, they were talking about death to each other, and the Dalai Lama said to Archbishop Tutu, "I think at the moment that I die, I will see your face."
Mm. Whoa.
And it was just this extraordinary testament to the what they mean to each other and the power of their relationship. And I think one of the things that was so profound for all of us who were involved in the crew and got to be present was the reminder of how relationship and friendship is our greatest joy. I mean, the joy that they took in each other's friendship and the knowing that it was limited and, you know, and was not endless, was even more a poignant reminder of how profound those relationships are and not to be taken for granted.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting, Dakota Midday. My guest is author Douglas Abrams. The Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World, written with the words and the teachings of the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Doug, I'm wondering if the two of them are the same off camera as they are on. What you see is
that's
what you
a great
get.
Question, too, actually. It's really, I've obviously had a lot more time with Archbishop Tutu, but I'd say I think both men are the real deal. You know, when you meet them up close and you're with them, they are as extraordinary and as beautiful and as human as, you know, they're kind of, you know, I think of Archbishop Tutu as an example of the most human human. You know, the most human we can be. And he talks about how, you know, it takes time to become human.
Yeah.
It takes time. You know, he says we are masterpieces in the making. You know, we are made for perfection, but we are not yet perfect. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that their humility, their honesty, their integrity, I mean, one of the things that they were so beautiful about what they shared is they really shared their humanity with us. You know, they were not preaching from a mountaintop. They, you know, were really sharing their stories of struggle. You know, the Dalai Lama talking about his fear of public speaking when he was young. I mean, they were, you know, his exile, the night that he fled into exile, and the terror and fear that they had as they went by the Chinese garrisons and the sandstorms and the snowstorms. So, I mean, they really were like these two friends reflecting on their life and inviting us to be there with them in this, you know, circle of light that we were sat in, and to share the experiences of learning to meditate with the Dalai Lama and watch Archbishop Tutu give the Dalai Lama Eucharist.
I know.
Watch the
that
Dalai
moment,
Lama dance.
Though, right? That moment.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
And, so it was incredible.
Oh. And we're talking about these two men and sort of their meeting, but then there's also, you as an author are sort of obsessed with joy as a topic. There's a lot of science in this book, too. Tell me a little bit about the neuroscience and the research that we know about joy today. Can you put that in a nutshell for us? Begin to?
So, I mean, I think the place, the neuroscience in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I think
sorry.
One of the things they said, you know, from the beginning was, this can't be a Buddhist book. This can't be a Christian book. It needs to be a universal human book. And I think that was really profound as well, that they really wanted this science in the book. They wanted us to... they didn't want readers to take this on, you know, as because they said it or on faith. They wanted to investigate it, interrogate it, see if it was true in their own lives, and see what the science had to say. And I've had the privilege, in addition to working with great spiritual leaders, to work with a lot of scientists. And so we went to them, many of the leaders in the happiness research, and it really confirmed quite a few things, you know, many, many of the things they said in the book, in terms of what leads to happiness, the importance of being able to shift your perspective from negative to positive attitude, the importance of gratitude, the importance of compassion and generosity and going beyond yourself. All of these, you know, were what the happiness researchers were finding as well, were, you know, the 8 pillars of joy that they present, that many of these were what the happiness researchers were finding were the most fundamental things to our experiencing more joy and more happiness.
In the Dalai Lama, at least you mentioned, sort of found not comfort in that, but he appreciated that there was, yeah.
Yeah.
He appreciated the science kind of, you know, made him realize that, I don't know how to express that. What the science meant something to him, though.
Well, you know, I think you're referring to the point that, you know, he said that, you know, when he wakes up to 3 in the morning, you know, to meditate, knowing that the meditation practices are good for his brain, you know, and mindfulness and meditation are good for his brain, were really motivating. And I was saying, Dalai Lama needs science to motivate him to get out of bed in the morning. You know, maybe we all do. And I think that's really, you know, Arch has this wonderful expression called self-corroborating truth, where he says, you know, when you take the truth from various disciplines and various traditions, so you take what the Buddhists say and the Christians say and the scientists say, and where all of those things intersect, that's where you find real truth.
And the book ends with an appendix of joy practices. Like you mentioned, the eight pillars of joy deals with obstacles to joy. It's definitely one of those books you could read again and again and probably dip into it at different times of your life for different moments of wisdom. So Doug Abrams, I want to say thank you so much. The book is called The Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World. Doug, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Lori. It's such a pleasure being with you, and thanks to your listeners. It's really been a joy.
We appreciate you.